You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
The proposed twinning of the 1,150-kilometer Kinder Morgan Trans Mountain Pipeline will come before the National Energy Board for hearings this spring. The project will transport tar sands materials, including crude oil and diluted bitumen, through BC lands and along waterways to be loaded onto tankers in Burnaby. The Wilderness Committee describes the process for public participation in those hearings as onerous, with narrowly defined limits on who can be heard and a short window to get applications in. Applications close February 12th. The Wilderness Committee is mounting an aggressive campaign to respond and to mobilize the public to participate in the hearings. Owen Madden is climate campaigner with the Wilderness Committee, and he's joined me now in the studio. Hi, Owen, and thanks for coming in.
Good morning. It's good to be here again.
Now, what are the most critical environmental reasons for opposing the Kinder Morgan pipeline?
This pipeline represents a guaranteed spill into our atmosphere, first of all. So whether or not we have an oil spill locally, there is a guaranteed spill into our atmosphere in an era of climate change. We can't afford to go this direction with our infrastructure. We need to be shifting to a cleaner way of doing energy. And this pipeline, for a lot of people, represents a step backwards. The oil spill realities are there too. We've seen in 2007 a very big spill from this system of pipelines run by Kinder Morgan in Burnaby. There's a huge spill, a risk of spill in the marine environment just off our west coast as well. There's a recent report this week which says the actual type of product, you properly defined it as a mixture of different types of oil. Bitumen is the main product in here, or dilbit. It's a tar sand that's been cut down with a condensate type of gas to travel through a pipeline. It can't travel through a pipeline because it's so thick. It's kind of like molasses. Now, this week, the federal government, having studied the issue, and after a long engagement, a battle over whether or not it would float or it would not, it's come to the conclusion that in certain conditions, it's guaranteed to sink. So it's a different sort of product from any other product that's ever plied our waters, and it increases the oil spill risk or effect on our tourism industry, et cetera, here. So the climate change impacts combined with the oil spill local impacts are the two big ones.
Now, I understand that a Freedom of Information request brought to light a memo by the Canadian Association of Petroleum Producers, or CAP for short, that heightens concern over the National Energy Board reviews. So first, who is CAP? And what did you learn about their process?
Yeah, so early in 2012, a Freedom of Information request by a group called the Climate Action Network, a network of organizations that are deeply concerned by the lack of action on climate here in this part of the world, investigated or submitted an application to the government to learn about the activities of lobbying groups in Europe, mostly, because there was a big push in Europe to label, quite rightly, this type of oil, this tar sands oil, as more destructive than any other type, and to put it in a different tariff, a different tax bracket. Now, what turned up was a policy document by CAP, which had a column of folks like me, who they would consider to be adversaries, and other organizations which they, or groupings they would consider as friendly, allies, if you will. And in that list was the National Energy Board, the NEB. Now, that is a regulator, supposed to be independent. It's a bit like me saying to you, I consider the revenue agency here in Canada as my ally, when they're supposed to be regulating my activities and my ability to pay my own taxes. So it triggered an alarm. And quickly after that, then there was legislation called Bill C-38, which brought in alarming changes to how the National Energy Board conducts its business. Rather than it making the final decision, for instance, on whether these pipelines are built, that decision was taken back to the Cabinet of Ministers. And secondly, rather than there being an open door to people coming in to give their views on whether these pipelines are in Canada's best interests, there was an introduction of a new qualifier called directly affected. What that means is that if you want to speak at these hearings, you've got to prove through an 11-page application process and a sort of a mini hearing prior to the hearing on your ability to participate. It changed everything. From our perspective, it reduced public participation greatly. And the feedback we're having from our members is that they're struggling now to get into the process.
I have the quote-unquote pleasure of watching the loading of the barges from my front room window. So every time I wake up in the morning, go to bed at night, or wake up during the afternoon and look out the window, there they are. And I had heard that requirement, that we must be directly affected, and I thought, well, how can you show that?
Yeah, you've pointed towards one of the big issues in this is the backdrop. You know, these tankers are sitting in one of the most beautiful places in the world. That beauty is generating an enormous industry around tourism. That's all at risk by these activities by Kinder Morgan and what it's proposing to do to basically triple the output, go from 80 tankers to 400 tankers a year. In relation to where you sit geographically, it does increase your ability to get to be part of this process. So it seems the National Energy Board will be quite location specific and will look to a certain area around the pipeline for people to be involved. Beyond that, they certainly don't want anyone who has climate concerns to be speaking on the issue. I consider, and I know the Wilderness Committee shares my views, that everybody is directly affected by this pipeline. We all have a right to speak on it. For there to be a reduction in public participation on this pipeline is sad. It's a step backward. There is a core issue here too, and that's that whether you're for pipelines or against pipelines, you should always be for your democratic rights. Always. That's a core Canadian value. That's not about how you see yourself in the world or how you see Canada progressing. It's a basic right that's being eroded right now. So we're going to be fighting for democratic rights to participate as much as any other issue over the next couple of weeks.
Well, there's also a very short window of time to get your application in. So what is the process like for applying to speak to the review board?
Yeah, I could almost use the rest of my interview here to sort of explain the process. It's so lengthy, but in a nutshell, you get what's called a GC key. It's a login identifier from the Government of Canada that allows you to get into the process. And it's quite a lot of information you have to provide at that stage, quite like signing up for internet banking, for instance. If you're intimidated by that or you don't want to go through that process, you have the option of using your sign-up details with your internet banking to get into the process. So people are already intimidated by the potential for there to be some sort of a transfer of knowledge from banking activities of your own to this process. It doesn't look great for people, so they're already intimidated by that. Then you fill out a 10 or 11 page application to say you're directly affected, which Kinder Morgan are actually provided with a copy of. They then have an opportunity to come back and say, actually, Owen Madden, you don't belong in these hearings for X, Y, Z reasons. And you then have a chance to respond back to them. So like I said, it's a quite intimidating pre-hearing hearing on your eligibility to say anything on this pipeline. A huge difference between what's happening now and of course what happened with Northern Gateway. Like these changes that I've told you about in Bill C-38 brought in by the federal government happened during the Northern Gateway hearings. So it didn't affect how people had gotten into that process. 1,200 people did get to comment on that pipeline. A lot less will get into this one. Unless we work very hard, of course, to have workshops and just handhold people through the process.
Are they also limiting the amount of time they'll listen to people who've gotten into the process this way?
Do you mean the time that they have to actually make presentations?
Right.
I believe once you get through the onerous process of being eligible, proving yourself eligible, you'll have pretty much the same entitlement as what would have happened at Northern Gateway. They will basically tell you the level to which you can participate. If you can be a full intervener, you can come along and make your oral submissions. If they decide all that you're good for is a letter of comment, then you are at a lesser point than you would have been at Northern Gateway.
But the whole thing is to create a whole series of hurdles for people.
The message machine that is the federal government at the moment has been clear on this issue. They want to speed things up. They want to fast track these applications through 1,200 people turning up at the Northern Gateway hearings, all except for three of whom said this was a crazy idea, both economically as well as in any other way, doesn't, from the federal government's perspective, represent fast tracking. I believe democratic rights should not be fast tracked. They're important enough for us to sit back and make a considered judgment on whether these pipelines are in our interests. And from our perspective and my perspective, they are not.
Now, the Wilderness Committee has fought on many environmental issues. This is about access to public participation, and you're undertaking to have workshops to help people pass through that hurdle. What do those look like, those workshops?
They're a direct response from some of the emails I've been getting over the last couple of days by our membership, who say that they have tried to get into this process and cannot get through the hurdles that are there. For instance, from our membership, 30,000 people, another 30,000 folks that are part of Wilderness Committee that are not members, but just looking at the membership we have, if we were to depend on their internet savviness, if we were to depend on their email contacts being provided to us, that would exclude 50% of that membership. So using that as a guide, we'd expect a lot of people, maybe even half of the people who try to get in there, to find problems with the system. Just the system, regardless of whether or not they can prove they're directly affected, the actual process itself. Therefore, we're having one workshop outlined for next week, and we have another one expected for the following week. We have another workshop in Victoria, and we hope a whole series of workshops to have folks come in. We can sit down with them at a computer, and we can show them how the process works or how we've learned to get there, to get that examination, we'll say, of your eligibility going, because as you've pointed out, there's a big hurdle before that stage even. We'll have one in our offices next Wednesday, and I believe you'll read out the details as well, the phone number to call.
How many people would you estimate, what sort of percentage you estimate have been intimidated by this process up to now?
Very hard to tell. The window for intervener applications opened on Wednesday. I have had not a huge amount, maybe 6 or 7 emails directly so far already from people saying that they're struggling. I won't have an estimate until around the 12th of February when the window closes. We do want people to make an application. Should they be concerned by this, should they have anything to say for or against this pipeline, we want them to make the application and we want to know how they got on. We'd like to know whether or not there was a proper examination, a proper consultation with communities on this pipeline. So I'm asking people not to be intimidated by it, and if they're finding it difficult, to come to the Wilderness Committee, let us know, and let us handhold you through the process. It's nothing to be embarrassed about. It is quite complicated, and there is a lot of quite intrusive questioning before you even get the directly affected part of it going.
Okay, well, we'll let people know about that and how they can contact you. They can do that by calling 604-683-8220.